This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. Forecasters say they expect Hurricane Dorian to become a dangerous and powerful storm when it moves into the western Atlantic toward the U.S. southeastern coast. Dorian strengthened from a tropical storm into a Category 1 hurricane as it struck the U.S. Virgin Islands on Wednesday, clobbering the territory with fierce rain and powerful winds. The National Hurricane Center director Ken Graham says residents along Florida's east coast need to be ready for the storm.
Keeping on in a hurricane with time becoming a major hurricane by Saturday is what we're expecting, and then continue to be a major hurricane as we get really close to the Florida coastline.
The storm continues to move in a northwesterly direction, and late Wednesday was northeast of San Juan, Puerto Rico, with sustained winds near 160 kilometers per hour at that point. On Wednesday earlier, President Trump and the mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, had a Twitter fight over federal aid to the territory resulting from a previous storm.
The president's apparently still smarting over some Puerto Rican officials criticizing his administration's response to Hurricane Maria 2 years ago. San Juan Mayor Carmen Yulín Cruz was among the most outspoken, the president's calling her incompetent and Puerto Rico one of the most corrupt places on earth. He's again making a claim fact-checkers have repeatedly knocked down, that Puerto Rico's received more aid than any place ever. The mayor is telling the president to get out of the way and make way for those of us who are actually doing the work on the ground. Sagar Magani at the White House.
Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez urged Canadian counterpart Chrystia Freeland on Wednesday to help in end U.S. sanctions on Venezuela in the third meeting since May on the South American country's political and humanitarian crisis. The communist-run Cuba is a strong ally of the leftist President Nicolas Maduro, whom most Western nations, including Canada, want to step down. This is VOA News. Both the United States and Iran denied Wednesday that they were looking to ratchet up tensions with one another. Defense Secretary Mark Esper said at the Pentagon that the United States is not seeking conflict with Iran.
I'm not sure I'm ready to call the crisis over yet, but so far, so good. And we hope the trend lines continue that way. And we hope that all the parties, that the Iranians would agree to talk, meet and talk and help us resolve these issues.
The Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif also said during a visit to Japan that his country is not seeking to intensify disagreements with Washington, but why differences remain over Iran's nuclear weapons program and Washington's economic sanctions on Tehran. This week, U.S. President Trump said that there's a really good chance he would meet with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani to negotiate a new agreement to limit Iran's nuclear program. Rouhani said that Trump must lift all sanctions the United States has imposed on Iran. The top U.S. military officer says it's too soon to talk about an American troop withdrawal from Afghanistan or the future of U.S. counterterrorism forces there. As peace talks with the Taliban continue, Marine General Joseph Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said Wednesday at the Pentagon that a peace deal is still being worked out.
I believe that what is needed is some type of disruption to the status quo. I think an agreement that can initiate inter-Afghan dialogue and potentially leading to a reduction of violence associated with the insurgency is something that's worth trying.
Taliban officials have said that a deal being negotiated with the U.S. would require the insurgent group to open a peace process with Afghan stakeholders to discuss a ceasefire or reduction in attacks against government forces, along with matters related to future political governance. U.S. officials say the Taliban also would be bound to prevent al-Qaeda from establishing a safe haven in insurgent-controlled Afghan areas and to help defeat Islamic State terrorists in the country. Some business groups are asking President Trump to delay the tariffs against China. AP correspondent Shelley Adler.
A coalition of 161 manufacturers, farmers, retailers, natural gas and oil companies, as well as other business groups, has signed a letter asking President Trump to postpone tariff rate increases on Chinese goods. The letter, organized by Americans for Free Trade, comes as tariff increases are set to take effect Sunday, followed by further increases October 1st and December 15th. The group points out tariffs come right in the middle of the busy holiday period, adding action is needed to protect American businesses as well as consumers. Shelley Adler, Washington.
Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 29th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Cameroon bishops appeal to both the government and separatists to reopen schools next week.
It was an open letter for both of them to have a free environment where children can go to school, free from harassment, because education, you cannot go to school when there are military men carrying guns around.
Ungon David is the public affairs person for Cardinal Christian Toumi of Douala. South Sudan orders the deportation of 20 security managers for spying. A Zambian opposition leader appears in court today for allegedly calling President Lungu a dog. And it appears Africa has a social media anti-corruption commission.
The young population must rise up and take the continent back, not through fighting, but by using our knowledge and understanding and teamwork to stand up against it.
That's Nana Akoto Ajema of Change Africa Movement. We'll remember the late Sir Dauda Jawara of the Gambia and saving Kenya's white rhino from extinction. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Schools in Cameroon's conflict-ridden English-speaking regions are supposed to reopen on Monday, September the 1st, but it seems unlikely they will. In some areas, the separatists have burned down schools, and the Cameroon military have used some schools as barracks. The Bamenda Provincial Bishops' Conference has sent a letter to both the government and separatists to reopen schools next week, saying children deserve the right to education and a good future. Ungon David is the public affairs person for Cardinal Christian Toumi of Douala.
The bishop of the Classical province of Bamenda and some of the Francophone bishops have held the government and the separatist fighters to allow the children to go to school, because for the past 3 years our schools have been down and the northwest and southwest have been empty. Some of our young girls are now pregnant with children, some like 12, 13, 14, 15 years are carrying babies. Like the case of Kumbu, I was discussing with one father from Kumbu. They are having 15 children impregnated. They don't know who are there, but they are having babies now, less than 15 years. So the bishops have been a pastoral letter out appealing to the government and to the separatists to allow the children to go to school, because their future lies in the school. Without that, there will be no future for them.
Are the bishops blaming only the separatists, or do they also blame the Cameroon military?
They blame the two, both of them. The military shoot on the other side, and the separatists do the same. It was an open letter for both of them to allow the children to go to school, to have a free environment where children can go to school, free from harassment, because education, you cannot go to school when there are military men carrying guns around. And sometimes your brother was being shot by a military or by a separatist. You see any of them with a gun, children will be traumatized.
The parents in the English-speaking regions, how do they see what is happening, the separatist movement versus the Cameroon military? The ordinary people in the English-speaking regions, how do they see this whole conflict?
The parents are now living in fear. They themselves, they are not safe. Their children are not safe. So they were looking for an environment where there will be a ceasefire and their children will go to school peacefully. Right now, as I'm talking to you, they have declared shutdown on the 2nd of September, which is the reopening of school year. And if you see the number of people leaving the northwest and southwest, you'll be very sorry. It's in the street because they feel they are safer here than in their own homeland. It is really terrible. Bishops cry. All their homes have been sometimes filled with internally displaced people. If it is that you come to the ground and see for yourself, you will understand. It is really, really bad.
Who do the bishops know kidnapped Bishop George Nkuo? I know he's been freed. Is it clear who did the kidnapping?
The separatists, they said they wanted to keep him safe, that they were protecting him, because they hold it for some hours. I spoke to him. Now he says he's okay and he is back.
Schools are supposed to open on September 2nd.
Yes, schools are supposed to open on September 2nd, which is Monday.
So as of now, it's not clear whether the schools will be allowed to open.
No. In the northwest and southwest, it's not certain. Because from all the information I've gathered, there has been a death threat on children and students who go to school. Some parents are scared of losing their children.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Sarah.
Ungon David is the public affairs person for Cardinal Christian Toumi of Douala. He was speaking with us from Douala. From the video of a Nigerian deputy minister being chased in the streets of Europe by cameras, corruption in Africa's educational system, bosses demanding sex from female applicants, to religious leaders stealing money from their congregations, these are all issues on the agenda of what appears to be Africa's Social Media Anti-Corruption Commission. Nana Akoto Ajima is proprietor of the Change Africa Movement, a news and media website based in Ghana. He says the young people of Africa must rise up and take the continent back, not through violence, but by using their technological know-how.
Change Africa Movement is a platform that we're using to mobilize and educate the youth in Africa in order to be more responsible and see the continent to be our own and help stop delusion of the African continent, because it is said that Africa is the continent with the youngest population, yet the youth are in abject poverty, and that is what we are fighting against.
I've seen some very interesting videos. Who takes those videos?
I do them myself with my team.
Can we say that Change Africa Movement is a social media version of Anti-Corruption Commission?
Sure, we can say that.
What are some of the interesting videos that you have put out so far?
So far, I have videos on the youth and sex, corruption, how the youth can guide against corruption, and why we should speak against corruption, even if that will lead to we being arrested. I also have video on the corrupt nature of our educational system and how the students can guide against examination malpractices, which has become a norm in Africa. I have the manipulation of the system where people seeking for job and your bosses would like to have affair with a female before they give them job and all those things. Those are some of the things we're fighting against, as well as religious leaders deceiving our people and taking their monies. We're trying to create awareness so that people can guide against it.
So what do you think has been the response to the kind of work you are doing, particularly the young people and then the people in power, the government people?
The youth are responding positively, just that there have been a lot of restraints. So we've not been able to go too much to the people, because the aim is to be able to organize, have some resources so that we can go from one school to another to educate them. Because I believe that when we start from the school, that is where the corruption starts from. When we are able to change the mindset of the students right from that level, then we'll be able to make a very positive impact, because they are the same people that will go up to come and take leadership positions.
I saw one of your videos, and I think this person is either a Nigerian government official in Europe, and he's being chased around. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, if you can speak to that.
Yes, yes, yes. I know that, because you see, what we try to do here, looking at the revolution that is going to happen in Africa, because this is a continent with the youngest population in the world, and therefore the young population must rise up and take the continent back. Not through fighting, but by using our knowledge and understanding and teamwork to stand up against this. Nigeria has been worse off under the current administration. And if we don't take care, we're going to see war happening in Nigeria very soon. You travel, you're a senator, a deputy senator. You travel from all the way from Nigeria to Germany to go and celebrate Yam Festival, to go and eat yam over there and come back at the cost of the state, when actually around that same period, the Fulanis in Nigeria are burning homes, killing innocent people over there, and nobody is going to their rescue. And that was why the Nigerian youth in Germany, when they saw their leader come there, they got angry and decided to beat him up.
I think in these days of social media, you are making a tremendous contribution to the fight against corruption. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm really grateful, sir.
Nana Kojo Ajiman is proprietor of the Change Africa Movement. You're speaking with us from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, August 29. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 and a half minutes past the hour. A council official in South Sudan's capital, Juba, says the government has ordered the deportation of 20 foreign nationals working with the private security firm Insight Security. Juba's deputy mayor accused the foreigners of exploiting South Sudanese and spying on the country. However, a lawyer representing the firm says the company officials have received no official deportation letter. Winnie Cirino reports from Juba.
Deputy Mayor Fikfik Mayadi told Saturday in Focus that after several discussions with the management of Inside Security about paying assorted government fees and employee benefits and pensions, nothing much materialized. The Juba City Council reported the matter to the Minister of Interior yesterday. Mayadi says the Minister of Interior ordered the deportation of 4 British and 16 Kenyans.
Today, the Minister of Interior have taken the decision. He deported them, 16 Kenyans. So they are now deported. And when before they leave the country, they are supposed to pay all the dues which the government won from them, and the dues which the employees of Inside Security won from them.
Mayadi says the managers were given 72 hours to clear the remaining payment or face arrest. He also accused some Inside Security managers of being undercover spies for unidentified foreign countries.
We are not closing the company, but we are dealing with the culprit which are working badly to our people, which have been causing problems, because they have been reporting even the security matters, which does not concern them. They have been biased to our country, they have been biased to our tribe.
Mayadi says Inside Security guards attached to institutions and companies such as the United Nations Mission in South Sudan are allowed to continue working. He says the Juba City Council will ensure that the new management of Inside Security pays them. Moinwak Alor Kwal, the lawyer representing Inside Security, says he heard rumors about the possibility that some managers being deported, but says his client has yet to receive any sort of official deportation notification.
The company is very calm because they haven't received any formal communication and they are waiting for that if there is any.
Interior Ministry spokesman Major General Daniel Justin says the Juba City Council served the Minister of Interior an order to shut down Inside Security last week because the company failed to pay its national employees what they are guaranteed under their contracts, but says the ministry has not received an order to deport the foreign employees.
We have not received any official order for their deportation or something of that kind. Yes, usually deportation is done by the Honorable Minister of Interior. But so far we have not. We, the police, we are the implementers. If at all there is something of that kind, we will be informed.
Last week, the Juba City Council authorities closed Inside Security and ordered its managing director to appear in court for allegedly failing to honor contracts the firm signed with its employees. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
A Zambian opposition leader is expected to appear in court today, Thursday, for allegedly calling President Edgar Lungu a dog. The government said Chishimba Kambwile, leader of the National Democratic Congress Party, made references on social media to dogs from Chawama not being tired of traveling. Chawama is a township in the capital, Lusaka, where President Lungu also comes from. President Lungu has recently been traveling. Chishimba has said his comments were misunderstood. Charles Kakoma is the spokesperson for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He says the Zambian government is using a colonial-era law that was put in place to keep Africans from speaking against the Queen, and which is now being used to silence the opposition.
It is not surprised us in Zambia because there are so many other cases of people that have been arrested and appear in court, and some have been jailed for speaking against the president. But this is a colonial piece of legislation that was originally put there to discourage Africans from speaking against the Queen of England. But it's a piece of legislation that has been carried on and is now being used in the modern society, a democratic state, to silence the voice of suffering people, the voice of the opposition. It is basically something that is meant to stifle freedom of expression and to scare people from pointing out the wrongs that the government is doing.
But, Mr. Kakoma, the government arrested Kambwile because they said that in the video that he made, he says there that some dogs from Chawama do not get tired traveling. The indication here is that the president is from the same area, Chawama. So they are putting one and one together to say that perhaps Kambwile was speaking about the president traveling abroad.
Well, we shall hear how they will prove that in court, because there are so many people in Chawama, and there are so many people from Chawama that are traveling. And obviously, there are also so many dogs in Chawama. Kambwile did not specifically name President Edgar Lungu in his reference. So they have to prove that the dog that he was referring to was President Lungu. It is just by insinuation that they think that he was referring to the Republican president.
Kabwili said that the government is afraid of him by the mere fact that he said he has been arrested 9 times in 2 years. Why would the government be afraid of him?
The government is basically scared of every leader of the opposition, especially those that they think afraid to their existence, their continued stay in power. Obviously, Kabwili is just one of them. There are so many others, even the leader of the biggest opposition party in Zambia, President Hakainde Hichilema of the United Party for National Development, UPND, has been arrested more than 15 times in the last 2 years.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. The Gambian government has ordered all flags to fly at half-mast in memory of the late Sir Dauda Jawara, the country's founding prime minister and president, who passed away this week at the age of 95. Hassoun Cisse, historian and head of the Gambian National Museum, talked to Ricky Stryak about Jawara's legacy.
He was a firm believer in constitutionality. That is why the Gambia's march to independence was really marked by constitutional development.
Did his experience as a veterinarian impact the way he made policy about rural areas?
Indeed. Number one, his work as a veterinary surgeon took him to every village in this Gambia. So he knew the country very well. He knew the farming community very well. He knew their needs. He knew their fears. Number two, his work as a veterinarian also introduced him to the traditional leadership in the country, namely the chiefs, in particular, because chiefs are very, very powerful during the colonial period. And his work as a veterinarian made him to develop a very, very strong rapport with the chiefs, which was to be very, very useful. And, when he, entered politics, he was able to get many of the chiefs on his side. And finally, also, he knew, rural Gambia. He knew every village. He had been to every village. Said that, his policies were very, very friendly towards the farming community. For example, provision of fertilizer, provision of seeds, a high price for groundnuts.
With the TRRC in the spotlight so much, Gambia has been in a period of transition now for the last couple of years. And do you feel like there's just a reckoning with the past in general right now in the country?
Yes. Particularly among the younger generation. Most, Gambians, do not have a memory of his, rule. This is an opportune moment, for the young generation to know that the Gambia was more than what the Ayajame's regime represented, repression, disappearances, political prisoners and torture. That was not what the Gambia was known for, during the, 32 years, rule of Sir Dauda. So in the past 24 hours, a lot of, soul searching has been going on. How come our country descended, to the abyss of human rights abuse and depression, from 1994 to, 2016? At least young Gambians will know, there was a golden period of Gambian history when, human rights were respected, when, you had free speech, private newspapers.
Do you remember Sir Dauda's rule? And do you have any fond memories of that time?
Oh, yes, I do. Growing up in the village, he will tour, the farms every August, September, as a young boy, he would pass by, in his, very modest convoy, visiting farmers, shaking their hands, visiting their fields, listening to them, speaks their language. He was very close to the people, seeing him intermingle with the farmers, inspect the crop, ask how was the fertilizer doing, how were the seeds doing. I have very, very fond memories of that, yes.
That was Hassoun Cisse, historian and head of Gambia's National Museum. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from the capital, Banjul. A team of veterinarians in Kenya's Old Payeta Conservancy is trying to save the northern white rhino from extinction by using in vitro fertilization, or IVF. The last two northern white rhinos on Earth are living at the conservancy, but since they are both females, they cannot procreate. Vets have succeeded in extracting ovaries from both females and hope to fertilize them using northern white rhino sperm to produce viable embryos. Ruud Elmendor reports from El Payeta Conservancy in Kenya.
were in the Alpa Jetta Conservancy in Kenya. Here, in a secure enclosure, two female northern white rhinos are grazing peacefully. But their fate seems to be sealed. They can't procreate anymore, since the last male northern white rhino, called Sudan, died last year. His tomb is not far away from here, in a windy field. It represents the obituary of a race that at one time, at the turn of the 20th century, numbered 3,000 animals. Now, with only two females left, the Alpa Jetta Conservancy has announced that veterinarians have extracted ova from the females to be inseminated with northern white rhino sperm collected earlier. The embryos would be inserted into the womb of a surrogate mother from a related rhino species. Alpa Jetta is working in partnership with the Dvůr Králové Zoo in the Czech Republic, where these rhinos were born in captivity. The 10 collected ova from the creatures were airlifted to the conservancy where they will be fertilized. They hope to produce a pregnancy soon, but getting a calf will take time, says John Stechkal of the Dvůr Králové Zoo.
We have to take into account that gestation period of a rhino is about 16 months. So even if we would succeed in coming, let's say, 1 year, it would not be realistic to expect to have a northern white rhino baby born before, let's say, 3 years.
The cost of the exercise was not disclosed, but the price is expected to be high. Alpa Jetta CEO Richard Vine says the cost is worth it.
We have it within our power, not only for the rhinos, but for other species as well, to reverse this process, to live better with the planet, to live more in tune with our environment.
Still, there's no guarantee the IVF method will work. A 50% chance, said Stechkal.
We did really good progress, and I think that this progress can give us optimism that we will be successful even in next steps.
It seems there's every reason to take the risk, because when these two northern white rhinos pass away, they will be buried next to Sudan, taking the species with them to the grave, to be lost forever. Ruth Elmendorp for VOA News, Alpa Jetta, Kenya.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Schools in Cameroon's conflict-ridden English-speaking regions are supposed to reopen next week, September 2nd, but it seems unlikely they will. In some areas, the separatists have burned down some schools, and the Cameroon military have used some schools as barracks. The Bamenda Provincial Bishops' Conference has sent a letter to both the government and the separatists to reopen the schools next week, saying children deserve the right to education and a good future. A Zambian opposition leader is suspected to appear in court today, Thursday, for allegedly calling President Edgar Lungu a dog. The government said Chishimba Kambwili, leader of the National Democratic Congress Party, made references on social media to dogs from Chawama not being tired of traveling. Chawama is a township in the capital Lusaka, where President Lungu also comes from. President Lungu has recently been traveling. And that is it for this Thursday, August 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show. I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it, yeah. Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.